sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi.
We're on chapter 1, the second volley, and we're on verse 19. So, chant after me.
Hanta chen manyate hantum. Hanta chen manyate hantum. Hatas chen manyate hatam. Hatas chen manyate hatam. Ubhau tau navijanitaha. Ubhau tau navijanitaha. Nayam hantina hanyate. Nayam hantina hanyate. Sandi. Hanta chet hanyate hantum. Hatas hataha chet manyate hatam. Ubhau tau navijanitaha. Na ayam hanti nahanyate.
Okay. I'm going to translate this and then go back to the previous verse, which is so connected to this one. Hanta chet. If the killer, hanta means killer, if the killer, the one who is going to kill, if he thinks, manyate, so hanta chet, chet is if, hanta from hantra, it's the nominative singular. So if the killer thinks, hantum, he is going to kill. Hataha cha chet manyate hatam. And if the one who is going to be killed considers, I've been killed, as he's dying, he thinks I've been killed. Ubhau tau navijanitaha. Both of these, the killer and the killed, na vijanitaha, they don't know. Na ayam, this atma, this self that I am, does not kill, nor can it be killed. Okay? So that's the verse. But if you remember from last week, the first verse, we're just going to review this a little bit. Najayate mriyate va vipaschita. This verse, it's one of the first real verses of the Upanishad in terms of teaching. This, the self that I am, this conscious being that I am, that we were focusing on in the contemplation, this self, najayate, is never born. Namriyate, nor does it die. This atma, ayam, this ayam atma, which is pure consciousness. So what we mean when we say this pure consciousness, vipaschit, pure intelligence, when in the meditation we're focusing, and I say turn your attention just to your own presence, to your own being, that is who we're talking about. That is the atma. And what the Upanishad says is that this self, this innermost being, that is you, that you already identify with as yourself, even though you take yourself to be the body and the mind and the sense organs, this most familiar self that is you, is what the Upanishads are revealing as being one who is never born and who never dies. So this conscious being also, he says, this conscious being, the self that I am, is something which also is not caused, nor does it cause anything. In other words, no one has created me, nor do I create anything or anyone. So for me, there is no... if you say that, if you say, I have never been created, nor do I ever create anything, that means I am free from time. If I am, and I have never been created, then the amness that I am, the being that I am, is free from time. Also, from the other, on the other side of it, if this self that has never create has never been created itself never creates anything, that means I am timeless and free from change. I've never been born. I never die. No one has created me, nor do I create anybody. In order to create means I have not come from anything, nor has anything come from me. Then it says, it gives some adjectives then describing the self that I am. Ajaha, I am unborn. Nityaha, timeless, free from time. Shashwataha, free from any type of change. And Puranaha, ancient, yet ever new. What that means, if I say, Puranaha is a really beautiful word for the self, actually. Your self, if you take this physical body that you have, if you were to go back 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, you know, that's me. 10 years ago, when I was younger, that was me who was younger, right? If I go back 20 years, that was me 20 years ago. I can go back to when I was a little child, that was me. So the self actually remains the same, even though the body is going through all kinds of modification. But now we have to look at it when we say Puranaha. It's not just about this body. It's about, if you go back into antiquity, go back historically to ancient times, the self that is here right now is the self that was there. That self has not aged, right? So even though you're the most ancient, because you're changeless, you are ever new. That's the meaning of Puranaha. So for me, for myself, there's no modification. Then it says, Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. It ends this verse saying, it's saying, when the physical body dies, the Atma, this self, doesn't die. When the physical body is killed, it says, hanyate, hanyamane, sharire. When the physical body is killed or being killed, the Atma is not killed. That's the preceding verse. Then he goes on to say, you take yourself to be a karta, somebody who does something, who's a doer. You think that you're a doer, and you think also that you have things done to you, right? That's the karta, means I do this and I do that and I do this and I'm responsible for that. Then you also think all of these things are also done to me. So I'm not only the karta, the doer, I'm the karma, the one to whom things are being done to. So here in the Upanishad, they use the most serious verb, right? Because I could say, you know, I read, even while I'm reading, I don't read. Or while I'm going, I don't go. But instead they say, when the physical body dies, you know, I don't die. So here, and then it goes into this verb that you identify with. I read, I say, I read, but I'm not reading. You know? And then the book says, I read, but I'm not reading. And the book says, if you think that I'm being read, that's ridiculous. So anyway. Anta chet manyate hantum. They're taking the most serious verb to kill. Like, that's the most serious crime I could commit. Even if the one who kills thinks that they are killing, that the self is killing, or if the one who is being killed believes they are being killed, neither one of those know. Neither one of those know the self, because this self neither kills nor can it be killed. So it's going into the very nature of the ahankara. The ahankara, so this is what has to be understood. It's all involved, and all these verses are talking about this now. When we make this differentiation between myself and my body, right? How we do that is I recognize, as we did in the meditation, I recognize that this physical body is something that I take to be myself, but now I recognize that actually it's an object of my awareness, right? If it's an object of my awareness, then in that subject-object relationship, this no longer is myself. It's differentiated from myself as an object that I'm aware of through my sense perception. And so what we have to say is, now myself is as though becoming innermost to this physical body. And yet I had always taken myself to be this physical body. Okay. When I take myself to be this physical body, this is what we call the ahankara, the I notion. And so this I, we call it an I notion because when I differentiate myself from the body, and the body I recognize as an object of perception, then this I that I had superimposed on the body is now called an I notion. Instead of being me, it's a notion of me, because actually I'm innermost to that. I'm a subject who's aware of this body. And so that's what we call this ahankara, this I notion. The I notion moves inward. So it moves inward to, first of all, my sense organs, because I realize actually I'm the subject of this body. I'm not the body. The body is objectified. But what objectifies the body are my sense organs. And so now the sense organs become the I, the subject, the me. But then I recognize that the sense organs themselves are known by my mind. My mind uses the sense organs and objectifies. I know if I can see, I know if I can hear, I know if I can taste. And so since my sense organs are objectified, instead of the sense organs being me or the I, they become the ahankara. They become the notion of I, because I recognize that actually it's my mind that is the knower of the sense organs, and my sense organs are the knower of the body, right? So now the mind becomes me. Oh, so I must be my mind. But then I recognize that all of my thoughts are known, all of my feelings are known, all of my memories are known, whatever is going on in my mind is objectified. And I am aware of them. Right? And so now the mind also gets this status of being an I notion, not really me, because I am innermost even to the mind. See what I mean? And so when we're trying to discover who am I really, it's not going to be something that I'm aware of and watching change. It's not something that I cannot be an experience which I can be without. Right? If I can be without a given experience, then that's not me, because the experience is gone and I'm still here. And so when we're looking at things that I can objectify, as we're objectifying things, I gently turn my attention toward the subject. And the subject, me, is always free by nature of the thing that I'm looking at. Like, for instance, if I objectify my body and then I turn toward the one who's objectifying, the one who's objectifying the body is different than the body. It's a different experience. That's why, say if I sit and I'm just aware of my body and then I'm focusing on my own self, those are two different experiences. Because when I focus on the subject that's illumining the body, now I'm having an experience of the subject, not of the object. It's the same with my mind. If I'm focusing on the thoughts in my mind or the feelings of my mind, and then I turn toward me, the one who's illumining the mind, it's two different experiences. I am the one who's illumining the mind is free of the mind. So when we do this, this is what we call viveka. It's a differentiation that's taking place so that I can start to recognize who I actually am. And once we strip off all of these dresses, the one who is subject to death, like the body is subject to death, but not the subject, not me. The mind is subject to thoughts and anxiety and depression and all kinds of feelings. which is fine. That's the nature of the mind. It's going to have all different emotions and thoughts and feelings, but not the one who illumines the mind. So that's why when we look at kind of our inner space, as we turn into just gently focus on the subject instead of the object, the subject experience by itself now. Once you differentiate the subject from the object, you're just being with yourself, right? And that is a different experience. In a sense, it's actually not a different experience from the standpoint of you, who you take to be yourself. You're just recognizing that yourself is actually free of a lot of the baggage that you had superimposed upon you. It's not that you're discovering another self. It's exactly the same self that you've always been. It's just that you're seeing yourself differently in terms of the subject rather than superimposing you on the object. But it's not a different self. That's really important because people think that they're supposed to discover a different self. You're not discovering a different self. You're just recognizing that your own nature is free of all of these things that you've superimposed on it. And what that means is that your being, in fact, the being that is most dear to you, the one that you don't want to die, you know, the one that if there's a heaven, or, you know, if there's such a thing as heaven, I don't really care about that at all unless I am the one who's going, right? Because most people, you think that if there's a heaven or hell and all of this kind of thing, you don't care about it at all, really. And the reason you don't really care about it is because you think some soul is going to heaven, not me. That's an important thing. It's kind of like thinking that my soul is going to Norway, but who cares about that? Because I'm not going. You know. So you have to recognize that we're talking about the you that is always here, and recognizing that yourself actually is absolutely stable. So you find that in all of your experience, you have an actual refuge, a sanctuary, because the one who is most dear to you is the one that you don't want to lose. You want to lose your depression and your anxiety and your worries and all of the, you know, body aches and all of this type of thing. Those can all are welcome to go, you know. But you don't want to go. You don't want to go because the one that you are is so precious, is so beloved, right? Yourself, you love yourself. You don't love your problems. You love yourself and you want your problems to go away. So now what we're doing is just differentiating the self that you actually love, that is actually meaningful to you. The problems are not very meaningful. Even the moments of ananda or moments of joy are not that meaningful because they're so temporary. You know, in fact, they have what we call sorrow in them because they're temporary. But there's one thing that's not temporary, and that's your own being. And that being is the one you want to be, have a lot of happiness, not have any sorrow. But you don't realize that that being is actually there. You know, you're worshiping that being all the time. You're worshiping yourself all the time. Let myself have this, and let myself have that. You know, let myself always be happy. The central being is the most beloved. You know, it's most beloved because it is what we seek. The only things that are beloved are the things that you want. You don't want pain. You don't want misery. You want you want to be loved. You want to be full. You want to be happy. So these are the things that we're all searching. Those are the things that are meaningful to us. But there's nothing more meaningful than yourself. So what does that mean in terms of the nature of yourself? It's miserable. It's not miserable, you know. We always want to protect ourselves because our self is the most beloved. A way to understand that too, this is what Swamiji always jokes about, is you love to go to sleep at night and cuddle up in your bed, you know, with nice nice blankets and all of that. So you cuddle up in your bed, really comfortable. So you can blot out the whole world, and you can even blot out your mind and blot out all of your thoughts, and even the one who's saying, I'm sleeping, that one's gone also. And we love that. We love that. We love to just be myself. There's ignorance there in deep sleep. But there's no world or nothing. We look forward to it. That's because of the nature of myself as ananda, as fullness. It's not suffering. It's something something very, very beautiful. It's the same, you know, like taking a walk in nature. We love to take a walk in nature. Because there's nothing, and when you're taking a walk in nature, there's nothing calling my attention. I just can relax in that beauty. What if in relaxing in that beauty, and my own being becomes more present in that relaxation, it makes me suffer? Right? Because you're relaxing. You're relaxing and nothing's calling your attention except that beauty. Your own being is much more present in that relaxation. You know? And so as you're miserable or are you happy? The thing is, I'm happy. I love to be in that state. You know? You love to be in that state because that's who you are. It's not a happy, happy, happy. It's the wholeness of your, it's the gentle wholeness of your own being. So that's what needs to be discovered. That's what the Upanishads are trying to help you discover, the very nature of your innermost, the innermost being that is actually you. And to realize that that being is free from time. It's free from time, and there's a lot more to realize about it also. So let's do this next verse. It's calling your time. Okay, this is verse 20. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. Atmasya jantor nihito guhayam. Atmasya jantor nihito guhayam. Tamakratu pashyati vitashokaha. Tamakratu pashyati vitashokaha. Dhatu prasadat mahamanamatmanaha. Kasandi. Anoho aniyan mahataha mahiyan atma asya jantoho nahitaha guhayam. Tam akratuhu pashyati vitashokaha. Dhatu prasadat mahimanam. Oh, I'm sorry, I had a typo there. It's mahimanam atmanaha. Okay. Anoho aniyan. That which is the atma from the second line. Subtler than the most subtle. Smaller than the smallest. Mahataha mahiyan. Greater than the greatest, larger than the bigger than the biggest. This atma, asya jantoho, nihitaha guhayam. This atma, which is smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest, is placed guhayam, in the buddhi, in the guha, in the cave of the buddhi, of the mind, of all beings. Of this jantu, means of this human being, of all beings, so really of all beings, but since we're humans, the humans are getting this knowledge right now, but it means for all beings, of all jantus, of all beings, this self is to be found placed in the buddhi, in your mind, in the intellect, in the deep mind, the guha means a cave, so in the cave of the mind, right? This self, which is smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest, is there in the cave of the buddhi, of the mind, of every being. And he says, Tam akratuhu pashyati. The one who is akratuhu, free from kama, free from desire, that person who is free from desire, pashyati, he sees that dhatu prasadat, because of the prasada, because of the peace, the prasada of his mind and sense organs, he sees that mahimanam atmanaha, that greatness, that glory of the self, means the actual nature of the self, which nothing can surpass. He recognizes that nature of the self, which nothing can surpass, and becomes vita shokaha, somebody who is free from sorrow. Shoka, vita, shokaha, shoka is sorrow. So vita shokaha. So this person who is free from desire, whose sense organs of mind have gained some shanti, have gained some peace, that person recognizing, seeing that the greatness or the glory of the self becomes somebody who is free from sorrow. There's a lot of things in this. Okay, I did that, Danya. I got it. Okay. The idea for this anoraniyan, being smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest, in this world that we perceive through our sense perception, say, just through our eyes, for instance, through magnification and whatever instrumentation we can have, if you can imagine getting to the smallest unit possible to perceive within this creation, the Atma is smaller than that. If through magnification you were to, or through the telescopes, you were to be able to see the very biggest thing that was possible to be seen or to be experienced, the self is bigger than that. It's a way of saying the self has no size. It's bigger than the biggest, and it's smaller than the smallest. It has no size, and yet is the self of the smallest and the self of the biggest. In the world that we perceive through our sense perception, in fact, everything that you perceive is actually not a thing, it's a conglomerate of things. Like, for instance, this is true for everything, even on a subtle level or a physical level. So say I'm perceiving this chair, the stuffed chair. But this stuffed chair, like Swamiji will say, this chair is just a name for many different things that have gone into this chair. This chair is made of a wood frame, and it has stuffed cotton, and it has cloth, and it has thread. And it has pins and tacks and everything, imagine nails. This thing that we call a chair is actually made of many, many, many different things. The Buddha used to use when he was teaching, he would say, there is no self here. Just like if you look at it, he would use the example of a chariot. You say this is a chariot. It's not a chariot. Chariot is just a name for a bunch of things that are put together. And if I take those things apart, and then I take those things apart, and then I take those things apart, I just find that everything is names, just names within names within names within names. It actually goes into an infinite regress. You actually can't find what the actual thing is. Because to find the actual thing, you have to find what is inside of it. What is its substance? What's it actually made of? That's the idea. What is actually here? You'd have to be able to take the form off of it. But if you can take the form off of it, you can't see it. So that's what they're saying here. That which is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. So you have to take the form off, and then it becomes formless. is formless, but then because it has no form, it can't be contained, right? And so what is the substance of the smallest is the substance of the biggest, because you've removed the form. Once you say that which is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest, you've removed all of the forms. You see that? If you remove all of the forms and you still have something there, then what you have is the ultimate substance of the smallest and the ultimate substance of the biggest. There's only one thing. And that thing is yourself. The reason it's yourself is because everything about you that has a form is objectifiable and divisible. Like, for instance, if I objectify my body, which I can do through my sense organs, I'm objectifying this body. I'm objectifying the form, and then if I want to really analyze, well, what is this form? What's in this form? Instead of recognizing the self that's objectifying the form as bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest, I can dissect this form. Well, it's made of heart and a heart and organs and tissue and bone, and then I would get down into cells and quarks, and I'd go on and on, molecules, and this would become infinitely divisible into an infinite regress. And I would realize, like the Buddha would say, there is no self to be found here. Right? Because I'm objectifying it, there is no self in something I'm objectifying. Because I'm the one that's aware of it, and I'm analyzing this thing. So he'll say, there's no self to be found here. And we would say, yes, that's right, there's no self to be found here. Because you're analyzing something that is objectified and is infinitely divisible, right? But what's so beautiful about this to understand is that what you are doing is, as you peel off form within form within form within form, you find that there is no substance in what is objectifiable. However, conscious being is the non-objectifiable substance that all of these forms are enjoying. So Swamiji will say, there's names within names of within names within names of all of these forms, but they're all names of what? Of what is actually there. And what is actually there is me, is conscious being. So as the bigger than the bigger and smaller than the smallest, for all beings, because all beings have this same problem. They're analyzing this being, like say the three of us in this room, we're all analyzing this body, mind, sense organs, all of these objectifiable things, objectifiable to me, the subject. But as I analyze them, they go into an infinite regress. You can't find anything there except the ultimate content, which can't be a form. It can't be a form because then you've got to take that form off. You've got to take that form off to see what is the substance of the form. So in the end, the substance of the form has to be formless. And that is me. But that which is me is also you, and is also you, because formless, non-objectifiable and formless. And how do you discover that? You discover yourself in your own buddhi, because actually the self of this chair is me also. But if I'm looking out at the chair, I'm already trying to find myself in an object, right? So I'm not going to find myself in this object. But here, with this body, mind, sense organs, the very subject of the mind that I have, right? The mind, like a mirror, can turn toward, I can direct, a means of knowledge can be directed toward you, the conscious being. So that's how this works. So here, the one that makes, sitting here, this body, mind, sense organs, the one that makes me, me, right? Who I am, that's not going to be objectifiable. You understand? Because if it's objectifiable, then who's objectifying it? That would be me. So I'm just left with me, this conscious being, that this body, mind, sense organs, has the capacity to differentiate itself from. And once I do that, then I recognize my nature, right? And my nature, which is non-objectifiable, and which is actually the very being that I always am trying to seek out of the world by making everything work for me so the world is not a problem. Let me have everything just as I want it. Let me have my family. Let me have my home. You know, let me have my horses. Let me have my dogs and all of these things. Let me have all of these things just to make them go away. And making them go away by if they're exactly what I want, then my mind's just at peace. I have what I want, so my mind is at peace. It's not bothering me. When it's not bothering me, I just get to be myself without any interruption. Right? And so to the degree I recognize this, I become somebody who really doesn't have any desires, because I'm more and more recognizing myself as what I'm actually seeking. And when I recognize that I am what I seek, that's the mahimanaha, that's the glory of myself. I recognize that. It's no longer superimposed on anything else. And I recognize that it's changeless, because non-objectifiable. When I recognize that, I become vitashokaha. Vitashokaha means I'm free from sorrow. Not because I am becoming free from sorrow. I recognize that my own being is free from sorrow. That's the vitashokaha. So, he says, dhatu prasadat, from the purification of the mind and the sense organs. What that means is I've removed that self-ignorance which causes me to superimpose my happiness onto the world and then run after it. When I don't do that anymore, my mind gains shanti, gains a peace. And in that peace, my own being shines. And I become liberated in the sense that I recognize that my own being is timeless and by nature free from sorrow. So that's that verse. Okay. That's good for tonight. That's enough. Say a prayer and then we'll have some satsang. Okay. Om Swasti Prajabhyav Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyaha Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho yam shobarahitaha brahmana santu nirbhayaha om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha sarve santu niramayaha sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotir gamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om purnamadav purnamidam purnat purnamudachate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Arihi Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Arihi Om. Jagadish, Swamiji used the word substratum of all, and we use the word ultimate substance of all. Is there a more appropriate word that we can use? Adhishtanam is the best. Adhishtana means, if we use the word adhishtana, that means that we understand mitya, right? And so when we say substratum, Substratum has a problem because you, substratum, like you could say this tabletop is the substratum of the computer and everything that's on it. So if we use the word substratum, you have to understand it as adhishtana. Adhishtana means that which is actually there in reference to something that depends upon it for 100%. Like, for instance, if I mistake a snake, a rope for a snake, that snake is illusory in a sense. It's totally dependent upon the rope for its being, right? Like if the snake is 5 feet, the rope is 5 feet. If the snake has three bends in it, the rope has three bends. So the reality of that snake is the rope. So when Swamiji is using the word substratum, or he also uses ultimate, he doesn't say ultimate substance, but more or less says that. He's always talking about what is actually there. Now, for any form at all, doesn't matter, any form depends for its being 100% on the substance. Think about it. You can't have a form without having a substance. You take the substance out, like say a clay pot. Okay, a clay pot can't be without the clay. There's a pot there, but really there's only clay. So there's a rope there, there's a snake there, but really there's only a rope. That's the thing that is 100% dependent is called mithya. The satyam, or the thing that is actually there, is called the adhishtanam. So the most appropriate word that we could use is adhishtana. And if you use a word like ultimate substance, or if you use the word substratum, then you have to, that's just an English word that doesn't have any meaning. You have to give it the meaning. It has meaning within vyavahara, within empirical reality, but you have to give it the technical meaning of adhishtana by defining it. See what I mean? Yeah. Okay, everybody. Good night. Let's see. We're having a camp this weekend. No, we're having a camp next, not this weekend, next weekend. Okay, everybody. I'm getting ready to go out the door now.